It's the internet. You're busy. Let's do this. Welcome to the Games Beat Decides podcast. This is the podcast where we decide everything about the world of video games so you don't have to think for yourself. I'm your host, Jeffrey Grubb. I've got two people with me this time. Mike, why don't you say hi first?
I'm Mike Minotti. Thinking is hard.
And we also have Dean Takahashi. Say hi, everybody. To Dean.
This is a special guest appearance by Dean Takahashi.
It's always a special guest appearance when Dean's here. I'm very excited. We're shifting up times. I got this, school started. Steph went back to school, so we're recording late on a Monday.
Schedule.
Yeah. Yes. My work schedule is very weird. I'm gonna be working very early in the morning, and then doing a little bit more work in the evenings, and that's when we're recording the podcast now. So I feel like we're gonna bring a different energy to the show through the fall and into the winter. Let's see how it goes this episode. Who knows? And I don't.
Got that Monday energy now instead of that awful Friday energy.
Yeah, that Friday energy's never been good for us, but, you know, whatever. We never really cared, so it was fine. Okay, so we're gonna talk about some news. We're going to talk about some games. First, though, I should probably run down these credits, get them out of the way. You can get more from all of us at gamesbeat.com. If you have something to share with us, you can email the podcast at games+podcast@venturebeat.com. Or get us at GB Decides or at GamesBeat for the site itself on Twitter. If you're listening to this on the website player widget on GamesBeat.com, you can subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, anywhere where pods are caught. And if you like the show, use any of those services to rate us. It helps other people find it. I also want to say thank you to Carlos Ayin, who is Insane in the Rain Music on YouTube, for the use of our theme song. All right, guys. Dean, you are the special guest. You want to go first? What have you been playing?
I got to go on vacation recently, and so I played a lot of Steel Division 2, which is a real-time strategy war game set in World War II, where you play the Russians fighting the Germans on the Eastern Front.
Now, I know, I understand you've been getting really into this. This has been out for a while, right? I believe it has, right?
Oh yeah, about a month or so.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So it is relatively new still. So okay, so you picked it up new. What about it is drawing you in?
It's very well executed on just the crazy amount of details that you have to pay attention to and learn. If you felt like in StarCraft you were juggling like 10 things at once, you know, it feels like you're juggling 100 things at once in this game. And, you know, you could zoom down to the view of seeing what an anti-tank gun is shooting at. And you could see the little shells popping out of the gun as you're shooting. Or you could zoom out to this division-wide level of thousands of soldiers and tanks and airplanes, etc., all over the place across this just hyper realistic map. So,
now, are there any waifus or are there houses? No, are you, no blue lions or anything like that?
Zoom in and zoom out.
What are you supposed to even zoom in on?
Yeah.
I always see these games from a distance. I'm always kind of intimidated by them. But you are, this is like your genre, right? These like tactical war games. How does this one compare to something like Total War?
It reminds me of how I got really addicted to playing Total War Attila back in 2015. And mm-hmm. I played that one for hundreds of hours. And that was a very repetitive game. And since that time, this genre has advanced so far. And, you know, the tech isn't as annoying as it used to be. Now it's just seamless, zooming in and out. So I love that. I played a little bit of Total War Three Kingdoms, and I just had a little harder time getting into that compared to this. I was trying to decide whether to play this one or to play this three-year-old game, Hearts of Iron 4, and it just... this is the one that just sort of stuck with me, that even though it was very complicated to learn, I stuck with it. I learned how to play it. I watched several hours of YouTube videos before I kind of finally caught on to all the different things you could actually do in the game.
I don't think that's too unusual. I think this is that kind of genre where people will spend a lot of time learning it before they even like really, really dig in to start playing it. I just don't have time for that sort of thing in my life. So I think that is why I don't end up playing any of these. We had Rowan on a few weeks ago talking about Total War, three kingdoms, almost said three houses. And he did make it sound like this is something where I probably could jump in and still get a lot out of that. But Steel Division 2 does seem like one of those ones where it's like, if you don't have the time to dedicate to learn all the systems, you might be overwhelmed and pushed away. Do you think that's right?
Definitely. Like, when I opened the game up, there was no manual or there was no tutorial. And so I asked for it. And they said, oh, here it is. It's in the form of a YouTube video and another file. I think I got the early version that just didn't have all of that stuff in the game. So that just made it especially intimidating to play. But
what else have you been playing recently?
I played a lot of Wolfenstein Youngblood now. And
yeah, what are you thinking about that? I'm still like unsure about how I feel about it. I've been playing a little bit more myself.
I've been playing mostly solo. Every now and then somebody jumps into my game, a real person, and it's so annoying when they do that. It's like, you know, I kind of enjoy playing with my sidekick who is a computer-controlled person instead of the usual.
Are the people like screwing up and just doing their own thing, or like what happens?
Yeah, they run off and the nice thing about your sidekick in the solo play is that they stay close to you. And
right.
And so when one of you gets shot, it's not that hard to go and revive that person and to stay alive. I think too often when you're playing with somebody else, they're really focused on shooting some particular bad guy and not paying attention to you. And so they can just leave you to die when you're shot. And that just kind of, if you do that enough times, you end the game, basically. You have to start the level over. So, but it's, you know, I like it. I mean, the gunplay in Wolfenstein is great. The enemies are always very hard to beat. You have a lot of different sort of ways to approach a particular hard point. I'm having fun. It's just that I'm having fun not as it's intended to play as a co-op game.
Yeah, I get what they were going for here. It seems like they probably should have made it more than just a co-op game. I understand they like have these twin characters and that's what they're working with. But it felt like it might be better if you could just have like three or four people playing or something like that. Cause then like when you have people jump in or jump out, it's less about like this dual dynamic and two people working together. A squad can kind of like divide and conquer a little bit. Two people can't do that, I feel. It puts this weird pressure on each other to actually play together that is almost never going to work when you're just playing with a random person. But I mean, I think it feels really good to play still. I still think like the shooting and the controls and the jumping around, all that stuff is the best it's ever been in the series.
Challenging. It's really hard. Yeah. It's not easy, right? It's hard.
Right. And that's been the case with some of the other ones. It's just this one, the challenge comes from like making sure you're using the right weapon and that stuff's, there's something to that stuff. I do wish they made it somehow easier to make sure you're using the right weapon, to know that you're using the right weapon, because I feel like I can go in and like the beginning of each fight, I'm like, okay, what weapon do I need? I got to match up these icons. It's I don't know. It's a bit frustrating.
There's supposed to be like an indicator that tells you what kind of weapon to use on what kind of enemy, but you never pause long enough to actually notice that.
Yeah, it's up on the very top of the screen, and then I think like the type of weapon you're using is on the bottom left, so it's not like they're right next to each other, so you can just match them up. And yeah, it's a challenge. I mean, all that said, I think there's something here. I think people need to stick with it for a little bit before it actually gets good. Like you have to get, like, it's not like it is built like Destiny and it's built like some of these other looter shooters, but it doesn't have loot, so it's not an actual looter shooter. And but you still have to kind of like
sounds like a problem to me.
Yeah, I think yeah. So what is the incentive then? The incentive is you're still like buying upgrades to your characters, and Wolfenstein has always done that stuff really well. But it takes time to really feel the benefit of that in a way that like your first run through like a looter shooter, you're going to get better loot, and that's always going to feel good early on, especially. That's just not going to happen here. So it's going to take some time to like really get the,
yeah, you really
the payoff.
Have to complete missions in order to yeah. get the good points that will enable you to do things like double the, you know, the amount of your armor.
Right, and that's and yeah, and finishing missions like you can't like quit halfway through because then they just reset. So I don't know. I get what they were going for. It's just it does feel like they're going to have to. Either refine it or just move on from this, go back to standard Wolfenstein and say this was a fun experiment and then maybe build on it in a new spinoff in the future or in a different franchise or something. We'll see. Anything else, Dean? Any other games?
Just a bit of Modern Warfare. I haven't been to all of the different demos that they've done across different places, but I did go to one, and the interesting thing about the latest videos that are coming out about multiplayer are people who are upset that there's no minimap in the game, right? And the minimap definitely tells you it's a game, that it's a competition, that you're just sort of, you know, looking around for where people are moving. And
so wait, so it's the, like, let me get this straight. Like, there's no... Like the little mini map in the bottom corner that like, yeah. It's gone completely.
Yes, not there.
I think you can actually get it back in some form if you have enough kills.
Might be a kill streak thing.
Yeah, that makes sense. Like yeah, because that would be the like the radar plane. I can't remember what the name is, but yeah, the surveillance.
But for the most part, you're playing kind of blind.
So this is how it worked in hardcore mode in Modern Warfare in Call of Duty 4. And I always liked that mode because it was like you could be like the stealth option became a real option then. Now, I mean, the stealth option was good, too, because your gunshots wouldn't show up if you were using like a silenced weapon. That wouldn't show up on the minimap at like all times. And that was a really cool thing, too. But I still think the stealth worked better, like wrapping around people, going like finding like the interesting path through these maps and then getting behind teams and taking them out. They've de-emphasized that stuff so much. I'll be surprised if that actually works for any other reason. But I don't know. I think this is interesting. I think this is cool.
The funny thing is that your screen is still kind of cluttered up with stuff. It's just
of course, yeah.
You don't realize that the minimap is not the only thing that's in there. Like you can see this, you know, the icon of like who shot you or something pop up.
Yeah, you're still going to have plenty of information
gun
to act
there,
on.
Your bullets, your number of grenades, all these other kind of indicators will pop up. And that still makes you feel like you're playing a game as opposed to playing a realistic military simulator.
I think I like the change. I think sometimes in Call of Duty you're looking at that mini-map too much, more so than the action sometimes. I think it's good to just kind of have to kind of use your common sense about where people usually are, listening for people,
right.
Like literally listening for, especially these days where so many people were playing with their headphones anyway, so that audio information is very useful.
Yeah, and there was always perks about like improving your hearing so that you could hear other characters move, and that became more useful in hardcore because, again, you didn't have the minimap, and I love that kind of stuff. So I hope that's what that means.
One of the YouTubers, though, he was saying that the sound of the guns was so loud that he could no longer hear footsteps in the game whenever they were shooting.
Yeah, they'll tweak that stuff. They'll tweak that stuff. It's still the game's still what, like 3 months away, at least. Yeah, I guess two to 3 months. So yeah. They'll tweak it and they'll figure that stuff out. I would imagine like, yeah, getting the sound mix is important, but it is the kind of thing where they can still mess around with that up until the last minute.
They have beta starting in 1 month.
Okay. The people, they'll get the feedback there and then they'll really make a lot of changes. Mike, I think we've mostly been playing the same thing. So let's move on to you. What have you been putting your time into?
Pretty much still just Fire Emblem, man. Yeah. I'm deep into that second playthrough. Still been having a lot of fun. I'm really liking the Golden Deer. It's kind of a, not more likable, but kind of a bit more lighthearted group of people.
Right. They do seem like the, oh, we're all having fun here. We're a wild, we're like a, just a rambunctious group of kids
at
this anime school. And that is not the Blue Lions. That is not the Blue Lions. And the Blue Lions are just like, everyone is bitter and there's a lot of like classism and it's like every conversation and all these support conversations deals with that stuff very directly. And like the prince, like the main prince character, he's clearly, I mean, the dark past is starting to surface more and more. Ooh. And like, oh, his entire family was killed and he's the only survivor and he doesn't like to talk about it. And it's like, okay. And that is every conversation. So, I don't get that whimsical fun, and the Golden Deer definitely feel like that.
But I mean, there's still things going on and whatnot.
Of course,
it's interesting because I'm still just in chapter one, so I'm still basically replaying missions for the most part. But just like having this different cast of characters and kind of knowing what I'm doing better with the progression and stuff has been kind of it's made it all pretty fun to play through. Still,
yeah, I'm like approaching 40 hours, and that progression is starting to click for me where it's like, oh, I need to be giving people gifts to get their motivation up when their motivation's down. Cause otherwise it's just a waste. It's not just a waste, but it's not the most efficient way to be using my resources. And that kind of stuff is all just sort of like fallen into place in my brain in like the last 5 hours or so.
A lot of fun min-maxing there.
Yeah. And it's like, I haven't been doing it perfect all along, and it's not like it's been hurting me. And at the same time, it's like it doesn't feel worthless when I'm doing it. It doesn't feel like, oh, this doesn't serve any purpose. It's still really fun to be doing, even if I was kind of still just cruising along on hard without any problems.
Have you figured out who you're in love with yet?
it's so I mean, but there's no marriage, right? Like they're like that's what I've been like.
I mean, I don't know how much I want to give away. I mean,
okay.
It's not important, so, like, in some of the arguments. There's the thing.
It feels like I don't really like anyone else who isn't in my house now. And that's not, like, just about marriage. That's about, like, I've been recruiting other people, and even when I recruit them, I don't really care. I just sort of let them
No, I mean, the whole recruit, I'm the same way. When I recruit people from outside my house, it's almost kind of like a, I guess I did that. That's okay.
Yeah, you're my collection now.
I don't know if you've gotten the adjunct yet, but maybe I'll use
them for that. I've gotten one, yeah, and I use
Patrick. But even that, it's better to use the teachers. I mean, the thing is you can unlock the teachers, and the teachers are, like, really good. So I'm like, with my own class and the teachers, I feel like I don't need these recruitable, like, nobodies from the other classes.
Right, and like, the stories with the teachers are, like, seem more important, or, like, they are more crucial to the central storyline, at least, than, like, bringing a character from another house into your house where they're not going to show up in all of the cutscenes or whatever. So we just had the prom, and I got, like, my character had a conversation with Mercedes, who is not so, like, at first I'm like, oh, Mercedes, she's pretty. That'd be fine if they got married or whatever. and then we had a conversation where she was like, we had to go after, the word's escaping me, but basically traitors to the church. Yes, the Western Church. And we had to go hunt them down and kill them. And everyone's sort of like, man, this is messed up. It sucks that we have to, like, just kill them. Can't we, like, isn't there another solution? And she, like, she's got this, like, really, like, tiny, sweet voice. And most of the time it's just like, oh, I'm learning something new. Yay. And this time she's like, well, that's what happens when you betray the church. You have to be punished. And I'm like, oh, my God. Oh, my God, you. Mercedes. Jesus
Christ. Does your spouse approve of this relationship you have here?
What she doesn't know doesn't hurt her.
She doesn't know about the waifus.
She doesn't have to know about the waifus. yeah, so, but then the prom came along, and we had this, like, nice conversation, and it was like, oh, that's sweet. This is kind of romantic. Whatever. If I end up married to this lunatic, fine. Like, worst things have happened in history. I can change. Exactly. Maybe I can change her. Maybe I can make her see the error of her ways. She's always in the church. That is always where you find her. So I don't think so. But whatever. That's where I'm at with my characters. It's a really good game.
It's fun how much the kind of, like, cultural zeitgeist around it is helping my enjoyment. It's like we're all playing this game, and we all having these like kind of different experiences and these different opinions on these characters, and it just makes it all like better and more goofy and fun.
It really worked exactly how I think Nintendo planned it to work. They wanted people to have these different experiences, these different opinions, and to talk about it with one another. And instead of selling two different games and then three different games, they just put it all into one, and we can all sort of like see our own different angles of the same storyline. And it's been brilliant. It really has been a ton of fun. It is starting to feel a bit like more and more like the challenge is disappearing because my characters are getting so strong. I'm starting to face monsters now. And
have you guys watched the cautionary tale of the movie Her?
Hey, look, I don't think that my video game waifu is going to like self-actualize and come to life and take over my life. But yes, I'll try to turn it off.
I wish you would. That'd be sweet. I didn't see that movie. I assume it all ends happily.
Of course.
It's like, you know, just wait till somebody pulls the plug.
Oh, no. Break my heart.
Then how are you going to feel?
Bad. I'll feel bad. And Mike, you were going to say something.
Oh my gosh, I don't even remember. Dean threw me of a loop of the whole thinking about Bernadette coming to life.
If I could digress some more, there's a chatbot called Replica, and it's been downloaded 6 million times, and people are falling in love with this text chatbot.
Of course they are.
And people fall in love with Linoleum. It's like, it's like, oh, my chatbot understands me. It knows exactly what kind of thing to say.
Hopefully that technology comes to Fire Emblem, is what I'm saying. it is getting quite a bit easier.
On my hard mode replay, and maybe it's because of some of the new Game Plus things, but it's gotten easy again.
Yeah, I think the problem is like, you know, Fire Emblem always gets to a point where some of these characters can just go stand out there and take anything if you class them right. And I've got a couple like that are, you know, one guy's just an absolute tank and no one can take him out except for like if he gets in the range of a mage, then he's in trouble. But I can just easily move him out of the way or move in another character to take out the mage and it's fine.
Right. It's like the healers have like that move psychic where they can basically just heal somebody from wherever.
And it's right. Exactly.
Like, very strong.
And the real challenge is like trying to like maximize your results from a stage. Like if there's a bunch of chests around, it's like, okay, can I get all the chests? That's more difficult because it's like, oh, once you defeat the final enemy or you get the win condition, the thing ends and you can't just like go get the chest at your own leisure. You have to do it in the middle of the match. It's like almost like getting like all the red coins in a Mario is kind of how it feels. And you know, that's okay. But I, at the same time, I'm still having fun with like, making sure I'm like taking out these monsters really well and stuff
like
that.
Right. It's not completely mindless. You're still like making the decisions and stuff. And I mean, it's definitely harder right now than my first playthrough, but
Yeah. But it's still, I mean, a really good game. And I'll tell you what,
this is the first time I've been excited for like NPD results in a while. Cause I'm like, how well did Fire Emblem do?
Yeah, I know. It seems like it's really going to deliver. So, yeah, I'll be looking forward to that as well.
Will you be surprised / disappointed if it's not number one?
I can't. Yeah, I'll be disappointed because I can't imagine it's not number one. What else came out? I guess
not much.
Madden? I guess Madden could be.
Oh, if Madden came out, then that's that. I guess
was that the same month? No, Madden came out the beginning of this month, but it might like fall into the weekly thing. Who knows? We'll have to see. I think those results might be this week, so we'll talk about it next episode. But yeah, I'll be surprised still because it does seem like this has got a lot going for it. And if it is going up against Madden, then it'll be number two, but it'll be a strong number two. It is only on one platform, so it's gonna be at a disadvantage for anything like that. Still though, I imagine that when like Matt Piscitello of the NPD writes his stuff up, he'll be like, "This is by far the biggest debut for a Fire Emblem game ever." I definitely expect that to happen.
Yay.
The only other game I've been playing is Rashlander, which is like this. It's like Asteroids and Lunar Lander mixed together, and you are flying through this 2D space, and there's a bunch of asteroids and a bunch of space stations, and they create their own gravity wells in this 2D space, and the ship controls exactly like Asteroids. So you shoot off in a direction, and then if you want to go in the opposite direction or like turn a little bit, you have to sort of like overcorrect, blast your rocket behind you to sort of do like a counter-grade maneuver and move in a it's difficult to control just like Asteroids was, and there's a lot more going on, but I find it very satisfying, very fun. I've only put a few hours into it, and I'm not sure, like, it does seem like it's one of these run-based games where you're just trying to see, you're trying to learn how the world works and how this whole, all the systems work so that you can get the best run ever. And there's a daily challenge mode and stuff like that. And I can appreciate a game like that, but I'm only going to have a couple of them at a time, and they really have to, like, they really have to win me over to get into a point where I'm like, oh, okay, I actually do want to do all the effort of learning this roguelite thing. And the last one to really do that was I want to call it Dead Rising, but that's not right. The 2D Metroidvania one, I'll think of it. But this one, it doesn't feel like it's quite going to get over that hump. And at the same time, I still think it's really good. So I'll probably put a little bit more time into that and talk about it more next week. But yeah, Mike, any other games that you've been playing?
No, just reserving my name in World of Warcraft Classic, which took a bit of doing, but I got there.
Yeah, has that, okay, so you did get there. Did you get your actual name, or did you have to go with something different, or what?
No, I got my name. All my names are just plays off of Tolkodo now. Okay. So I'm a dwarf priest, so I'm Tol Docto.
Okay.
Like a doctor without the RC. I'm very clever.
Yes, I could see that. You're a creative person.
I mean, it was not a name that was in danger of being taken by somebody else, that's for sure.
But it said it was taken, right? So
I think it's because it was lagging and I pushed the slammed. Like enter button twice, so it like made the character and then thought I was trying to make the character again.
Okay.
It's all good.
Okay. Well, all right, when does that like open? Like when can you start playing?
It's the end of the month. It's like it's like 29th or something like that. 30th. It's right at the end of the month. I think it's going to be pretty big. I think it's going to be. I think some people.
It seems like people are. Yeah, people are. I can hear the buzz building. I guess Blizzard opened a forum dedicated to getting people from 2004 back together so they can all play again.
That's cool, huh?
Yeah, it's pretty smart. I think I like that. Okay, let's move on to the news though, since we talked about all our games.
Look at all this news.
Yeah, there's some news here. Okay. The first subject is like we didn't do an episode last week. We're a little bit late. But there was a lot of news surrounding the shootings and then video games getting the blame. And I mean, the first things first. These shootings are national tragedies. They are they're horrible. They also have nothing to do with video games. It almost feels offensive to the actual acts to even have to say that. Like I'm worried about video games. I'm not worried about video games. This is not like I don't even feel like at all defensive of them. The focus should be elsewhere because people's lives are really at stake, and that's what we should actually be worried about. I mean, all that said, though, there is some the news that had sort of like rippled out of this where video games got the blame, and there was some reaction to that. It is indicative of like how the industry responds and you know doesn't respond, that maybe it illustrates like where video games are, not necessarily just in relation to these specific shootings, but as their strength as an entity, and their strength as like something that can stand up and like talk about political subjects. You know, we'll just run these things down. One of the first big things to happen was Walmart decided to take down some violent video game demos and displays. And there were some pictures going around of a Walmart that took out every single game that wasn't like rated E for everybody or something like that. And I think Vice Games was the first to report this. And there was you could see like the paper that the employees got sent. And it did say like, oh, just take out anything that refers to any sort of violent game or movie. I don't know. When you guys saw this, what were you thinking?
I think there was some confusion, too, about whether it was really Walmart corporate that was dictating this or if they were sort of letting their stores just sort of do this on their own,
right.
You know, volition, I guess.
Right. So Walmart did respond, and they said, this is the quote, We've taken this action out of respect for the incidents of the past week, and this action does not reflect a long-term change in our video game assortment. This is Tara House, who is a spokesperson for Walmart. She went on to say, this is part of a thoughtful and thorough review of our policies. So they did seem to acknowledge that this was coming from somewhere centralized within Walmart, but it also sounds like it's just a quick knee-jerk reaction that will go away when the you know, this happened at a Walmart.
Everybody,
so when the spotlight passes.
Yeah, everybody pointed out that they did nothing to do any less selling of guns and ammo.
Right, so that's the other thing of this. They continue to sell guns just the same, guns and ammo, just the same as they always have. They have taken, for lack of a better term, assault rifles off of their shelf, long guns that are not like rifles, that are hunting rifles or whatever. But, you know, not like some of these killings recently have involved weapons that Walmart does sell. But it wasn't just Walmart. ESPN decided to pull an Apex Legends tournament in response to this, which, I mean, this one doesn't make any sense to me. I guess it's just... Disney and ABC, they don't want any part of it.
Some old conceited guy who happened to be the person who got to make that decision, made that decision, and
we're
all living with it, I guess. I don't know.
And we'll go through just real quick. Then Trump also condemned this, and Dean, you wrote about this. He says he's worried about the glorification of violence in video games and not really about guns. Rowan Kaiser, who I mentioned earlier, who is our PC guest post editor, he wrote an opinion piece about this. And I think his take was kind of the big takeaway that I've had as well, where, I mean, like you said, some old confused guy who doesn't really know got to make that decision at Disney/ABC/ESPN. The reason he gets to make that decision is because the video game industry just... It creates this bubble, this absence of a response to say, like, oh, video games, like, why are we talking about video games? Clearly, the issue is guns and a lack of enforcement of these laws. But video games will never do that. The industry as a whole and as ESA, the lobbying firm, just won't come out and say that, right?
ESA is too busy leaking our personal information to do anything about it.
We didn't talk about that either.
Well, that's all we can say about that. But then, I don't know. It's just very awful and weird.
I think it's indicative. Go ahead, Dean.
Rowan was really encouraging the ESA to just go on the attack and to take the Republican Party to task for distraction tactics and, you know, to really just come out and say what the ESA is relying on everybody else to say, like in social media. I mean, why don't they just come out and say that this is nothing but distraction tactics by demagogues and the real problem is guns. All this research shows video games don't do harm. They're sort of allowing themselves to be attacked by just staying silent. And that's Rowan's point.
Yeah, it's an ineffectual organization. What were you going to say, Mike?
And most of our publishers are like too worried about even admitting that their games might possibly have a political message to like even dare enter the arena of politics, even
right.
when it's to defend their industry. So,
and I think that's a part of this as well is that the publishers and the ESA and the IGDA. Everyone who has a stake in video games is afraid of like a certain group of people who are going to be like yelling at these companies if they say something political, which means if you say anything about guns or if you say like, you know, there's
guns, women or non-white people.
Right. Exactly. That's what their definition of political. And these companies don't want to like get in the crossfire and become the issue because they know they'll be attacked, which is. Exactly why they should speak up, because there are other people getting attacked because they are willing to speak up and they are willing to say these things. And the industry needs to come together to sort of push past that and say, you're being children. You're being absurd. Let's go focus on the real problems. And that requires a strong centralized organization that the ESA absolutely is not at this point. It is the furthest thing from that. It is falling apart in front of our very eyes. So it's just. It requires something that doesn't exist in this industry, and it also is just indicative of how weak the industry is as a as an organization overall. And it's
I am a little bit in a state of quandary about some of this, and that is, I think a lot of people tend to agree that game publishers and game developers are faultless here. It's not their creations that are leading to these incidents. On the other hand, I would like to blame Trump for it, but that's, say, equally hard to prove, going the other direction. Some people are also saying that there's a certain kind of gamer culture which is to blame here, which is, you know, that that same culture that is rejecting, that has no tolerance, is rejecting all of this diversity, and is, you know, criticizing and making the developers afraid to talk. That culture is not so far disconnected from, what's happening with the shooters. And I think Brianna Wu was one of the people who wrote about this in an editorial for the Washington Post, that there's a gamer problem in that, some of it is you can just find evidence of white nationalism.
Yeah. So I think what happens is that gaming is very attractive to a lot of different kinds of people, but it is a hobby that, like, lonely people find a home in. And I don't say lonely as any sort of pejorative. It's okay to be lonely. But when you, if you're trying to radicalize people, you sort of have to focus on people who feel ostracized by society, people who do feel alone. And gaming is served as a fertile ground for that sort of thing. It's not just gaming. We see it all throughout all kinds of different sort of hobbies throughout YouTube, where YouTube is really good at radicalizing people because the algorithm rewards outrage, and outrage is a really good fuel for getting people to behave in a way that is considered radical. You're right. It's something that we need to talk about. It is very difficult to talk about it when gaming's been being used as a distraction mechanism by people who want to draw the attention away from guns and from their complicity in white nationalism. The problem is that gaming, a lot of people in gaming are willing to have that conversation. And it is very frustrating that gaming is then used to distract people. Distract people away from people who don't want to have that conversation about themselves. White nationalist Trump, who is willing to stoke flames. I mean, the difference in the language that Trump uses and the language that these shooters use is indistinguishable. The only difference is he hasn't killed people with a gun yet, and he uses this language to get elected. It is absolutely his election campaign strategy, is to incite this sort of racist anger. And the only time that he disassociates himself with them is once they take up a weapon and kill people. That's the conversation. That should be the entirety of the conversation. But we have to start talking about games because no one in this industry is willing to just come together, our resources as one entity to say, hey, This is absolute distraction. We are willing to go after what the problem is here, and that is white nationalism, and that is guns, because they're afraid. And it's just disheartening, and it makes me think that, like, what is the point of an organization like the ESA? Even when they aren't leaking our information, maybe they should just go away. And I think in the end, that was the point of Rowan's piece and Rob Zachney's piece at Vice.
I do think that we're missing
There's
something.
Not much else to say about this, but if you guys have any other thoughts, we can wrap this up and move on to the next story.
Well, I thought that there's one part of the problem here that the game industry is creating, and that it's thinking that it has to present this united front, saying that games don't cause any of this. Don't cause violence. They don't lead to the attacks. Period. And that's what they want to communicate. But then that means that they can't really acknowledge this part of the gaming community that is bad for everybody. The enemies of gaming are going to seize upon that if they acknowledge that. They're gonna say, oh yes, there are these very antisocial elements within gaming. Therefore, let's get rid of all of gaming. Let's throw the baby out with the bathwater.
I don't think they're sophisticated enough to do that specific part, because that would mean they would have to acknowledge that like these antisocial behaviors exist at all, and that they are. Because what they are is they're radicalizing them towards white nationalism and reactionary politics, and that's the bread and butter of AM talk radio, and aka the Republican Party and Trump. So that's the enemy here, because the enemy is just someone who's trying to distract people. They're just gonna, as soon as the spotlight moves away from guns, they'll stop talking about video games, because they have bigger problems of like, oh, we need to get people stoked up about immigration again, which is it's this vicious circle. That's what they actually want to be talking about, because they think that's going to get them elected. But you're right that gaming can't talk about that stuff until like it does present a united front. But if it also presents a united front to just say gaming isn't responsible, then that's misleading. Gaming isn't responsible, but gaming could be having a conversation about the parts of its culture that are a problem, and no one's doing that either. But we can't talk about that until we move past the idea that gaming is creating violence, which I don't think is actually what's happening. It's way more complicated than that, and that's why it does require a united front, but a united front of informed, intelligent people thinking creatively about the problem. Okay, yeah. Now, let's go ahead and move on now.
If you guys think this is fun now, just wait till Modern Warfare comes out.
I know, yeah. Yeah, I mean, that was the one thing, and Rowan brought this up. They didn't even talk about any specific game that either of the shooters played. They're just, yelling video games. Maybe Fortnite. Fortnite's a game I've heard of.
Whatever it is.
Yeah, it's wild that that's what it's come to, but when they actually have a specific game.
At least before it was, at least they had Mortal Kombat, Now they
right.
don't have nothing.
Right, exactly, and it's wild and disappointing. All right, let me get my rundown here. I lost it because we had a technical issue.
I got your rundown. Nintendo, Microsoft, and Sony will make game devs disclose loot box odds.
Whoa, tell me about that, Mike.
Oh, it's crazy. Basically, there was a hearing, and kind of to be like, hey, what's going on with these loot boxes? That's a buzzword now, and kind of add it to get in front of it so that they didn't have to be regulated. The big three came out and said, we're going to make everybody disclose those loot box odds. And the whole thing is kind of farcical anyways, because so many of these developers have moved on from loot boxes and are
right.
just doing season passes now, which have been working better anyways. But that's where we are.
Right. I mean, do you guys...
Yeah, it is.
Is this something you guys want?
No.
It was very coincidental that they did this on the very day that the Federal Trade Commission started holding their loot box.
Well, it was a hearing. So that was the hearing where this came out at the hearing, I think at that hearing,
yeah.
Somebody representing somebody came up and said, hey, by the way, Nintendo, Microsoft, and Sony said this, and they wanted me to tell all of you, and now I'm going to read that statement. So, I mean, it was planned.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they don't want regulation from the government. I think that this comes to the same problem of do you trust the game industry to do the right thing, or are you afraid that they're just a bunch of money grubbers who will sell?
Grubbers, my word.
Cost.
You can't use that word.
I wanted to make a joke about grubs too.
I misspoke there.
is there anything worse than a grubber?
God damn it.
I mean, me and Jeff have never even really ever bought the idea that loot boxes are all that bad. The one time where they did step out of line was with Battlefront 2 and, the kind of fan base.
Very expensive,
The market corrected that itself immediately. So,
right, and drastically to the point where everyone was like, oh, we're not going to do that either.
Well, I listened to some of that, and the Consumer Reports person was actually very interesting, and they put it out a loot box purchases in Fire Emblem Heroes, and noted how it was not a linear increase in price. The more you bought, it was almost like an exponential one. And they said that it appeared that the developers had created the in-app purchase that way in order to just simply mislead the buyer about how much each incremental orb they were buying was going to cost them.
I think
that's very interesting.
That's why I'm also like, so you're right. I mean, I don't trust the game industry, but I also like, what's the alternative? I don't trust the government to be able to regulate this like at all. But like disclosing loot box odds is such weak sauce. Like, oh, who cares? Like, people don't even look at the odds on the back of like a lottery ticket. I mean, they're not going to look at this stuff. It's going to be on some website. Like, there are useful tools that could be created of like, yeah, like here is the potential of how much you're going to be spending if you go down this path, or like, here's how much you spent on a game so far in a nice handy tracker right in front of your eyes, so you could see how much you've spent. And none of that's being talked about. So, I mean, I don't know.
I bet everyone's going to say this has been a big win for the consumer advocates on YouTube, right? They did it.
But then like their business will go away. So like they're going to find the negative spin on it to keep saying like, oh, this is why you need to keep being angry. I'm very cynical about YouTube, obviously, but yeah. I don't know. Like I get where they're definitely just trying to avoid regulation, and it might work. It probably will work. This is probably going to work. It also shows like Nintendo, Microsoft, and Sony stand up without the ESA, I believe. And just more proof that the ESA isn't necessary anymore, and it's probably going to go away. So, yeah, every story is about to happen.
My dog died. Whoa,
Penny!
I just unmuted too, and she's like, "Now's the time I'm going to bark."
All right, let's get onto this next story. Valve is cracking down on abuse of Steam's upcoming release section. So let me explain this real quick. Steam has a ton of games coming onto it at any one time, which is, you know, PCs. It's the big PC gaming store, if you don't know. When there's that many games coming out, Valve is like, oh, we don't really want to try to, like, go hands-on with every single one and try to figure out, like, what we should be putting on top. We're going to create an algorithm that will surface stuff for different people based on what they play and what they like and how they rate things. You know, when you have an algorithm like that, I mean, when you have any system, even if it is hand curated, people are going to find the exploits to maximize their potential for profit. And what's been happening with Steam is this upcoming releases section has been a particular exploit that unsavory developers have been able to take advantage of. What they do is they say their game is coming out in like a month, and so it shows up on this upcoming release thing, but then it falls off. So what do they do to get it back up? Well, they change the release date to, you know, another month out. And now it's like, okay, it's back up on this upward trend, and it pops back up into the upcoming releases section. And the idea is, you know, I'll get more wish lists. More people will add my game to the wish list, and that increases my how I surface in other parts of Steam. And all this might get me, you know, X percentage more sales down the line. So Steam is now going to sort of maybe it's going to nip this in the bud by forcing developers to submit a reason why they're changing the release date. And it's going to have to be approved by a person at Valve to sort of eliminate this whole thing. So it should just go away. And it's just another like, OK, so Steam is kind of shoring up all these problems around the edges to make the whole system better for, you know, the average developer instead of these unsavory ones. It's, you know, it's not a huge thing. I've always been like, I bet very few people use any of these like things on Steam. They are probably just using word of mouth. But you know, hey, if this was bothering you, now it's not a problem anymore. Are you happy, Mike? I know you've been screaming about
this. I'm never happy, Jeff. Nothing brings me joy anymore. I am a cold, lifeless shell of a man.
Well, here's something that's going to make you happy. Minecraft has canceled the super duper graphics pack for Minecraft on all systems, basically. I don't know why that would make you happy. Maybe just because you hate Minecraft
fans.
That's
curious. I thought they were making a big deal about that.
They made a big... Do you remember when they made a big deal about that?
Wasn't it at a Microsoft thing?
It was like, in 2017 at E3.
Yeah!
2 years. So more than 2 years they've been talking. Well, they haven't really been talking about it much since that initial reveal. So for people who don't know, this was going to be like a big sweeping improvement to all the visuals in Minecraft. It was going to be optional, but the idea was, oh, you get an Xbox One X, this our 4K system, and then you can get this awesome 4K graphics pack that makes Minecraft look mind-boggling. But between then and now, Microsoft and Mojang and the Minecraft team have done a lot of work to make this like one Minecraft future where Minecraft is the same on everything. And I think what happened was, now that it's the same on everything, if they make a super-duper graphics pack, it's not going to run on phones, it's not going to run, probably not going to run on the Switch or whatever. And so they're like, okay, we can't really make this work, so we're just going to have to cancel it, and we'll figure out something else in the future. And I get that, because like they have the Minecraft marketplace where all these community creators are building stuff. And if those creators had to like support a super duper graphics pack, that would be, it would create a lot more work for them. And if it's only going to work on one system, it's probably not going to be worth it. Or if like, you know, it doesn't work on one system and people like want the you know, there's a lot of challenges there. So I get why they do it. And at the same time, if you want a really good looking version of Minecraft, you could do that. You just go use the Java version, install like the ray tracing mod and the 4K texture pack, which is all community created stuff. And you can make a really good looking Minecraft that way, a version of Minecraft that way. So it's not like you don't have the option out there if that's like what you're really obsessed with. Mike, what does it mean that Death Stranding is no longer listed as a PlayStation exclusive?
Nothing. I'm sure it still is.
Okay, a lot of people seem to think it's not. Like, it's going to show up on Epic Game Store very soon. That's what I'm saying.
PC, okay. At this point, it's like PC almost not anymore, does it? Does it?
Yeah. No, I mean, yes, I agree with what you're saying, but I think that is the reason that they removed it from this list. So the reason people are making a big deal about this is Sony had a list of PlayStation exclusives. Death Stranding was listed on there for a very long time. It is no longer listed on there.
Hmm. Yeah, I don't know. Again, I mean, worst case, it's PC, which won't really impact Sony
I don't think it's going to hurt Sony. I do think it's going to show up on the Epic Game Store, though. I completely believe that Epic was willing to pay whoever they had to pay, give some money to Sony to get this game on there as well.
It sure is weird, though. Like, when was the last time a Kojima game has been on PC? Have any of the Metal? I feel like Metal Gear Solid 1 probably had like one of those weird pieces.
No, Metal Gear Solid 5 was definitely on PC.
It was? Man, I'm a crazy man who doesn't know things.
Yeah, I think you might just be dumb. This is weird. How dumb you
obviously
are.
Obviously.
You can get that on Steam right now, I think. I think Ground Zeroes as well. Not 4. Obviously, Metal Gear Solid 4 was like the weird one.
That's a very weird one.
Yeah. I bet you're right that Metal Gear Solid 1 was also on there. I do think it's going to show up on Epic. I think that's what this means, and I think you're right that like Sony is completely okay with that. They don't care because it's just not competing in the same way as Xbox is. I don't want to talk about this anymore. Crates are leaving Rocket League later this year.
They are.
Yeah, it's because Epic bought them. That's not a big surprise. This last story though, we could talk about this real quick. Nintendo Switch is, you know, the light's coming out. The Nintendo Switch refresh is already out with a longer battery life. I think we'll find out pretty soon that some of those are using an IGZO display.
Jeff, what is an I? What is that?
Okay. Yeah, that's what I wanted
it's
to talk
pronounced
about. So,
IGZO.
IGZO for short. We'll call it IGZO. So most displays that are LCD, especially on like mobile devices or any device where you might be holding it at an angle, it's using like a thin film transistor, and it's a TFT display. What matters is they're using a thing called amorphous silicone that has these kind of big pixels. It can only get so sharp with the resolution, and it requires a lot of energy. That means like the battery life can only get so good. IGZO has much, much tinier pixels. It requires 20 to 50 times less energy than a traditional LCD panel. And what this means is way better battery life. It also means it can get way brighter without using as much battery as well. So it's like this ideal solution for mobile devices like a Nintendo Switch. you know, there's other benefits. You can get a much higher refresh rate. And this is something that's the Switch is probably not going to take advantage of. It also has much better color reproduction and much better color accuracy, which is something the Switch absolutely could take advantage of. It's not like the Switch has had a crappy screen up to this point, but the point is it's probably going to look better, and at the same time it's going to be brighter, and at the same time it's going to lead to better battery life. So it's just like this all around upgrade. That is a no-brainer, and I really hope we do start seeing it in more Switch models coming up soon. If they're not already using it, it should start like appearing in both the Lite and the Refresh in the coming months, at least according to Sharp, who is providing the displays. So it's a pretty big deal. I'm excited about it because I've had an IGZO display on my phone for a while, my Razer Phone 2. And it really does look much brighter and sharper than even like a Samsung Galaxy equivalent phone. So yeah, it's a pretty big deal. I know you're excited about hardware always, Mike.
Yeah, I understand what you'd say.
All right. Did you guys have any other news stories you want to talk about, or should we wrap this whole thing up?
No, that's it for me.
Well, I'm working away on some Borderlands 3 content because I went out to see it at an event last week.
Yeah, I mean, what's the embargo on that? Can you talk about that, or do we have to like pretend we don't
say
know?
When it's
okay?
But look forward to soon.
The magician demands secrecy. I understand. I'm playing Ancestors, the Humankind Odyssey right now, and I'll be able to talk about that. I think not this not next episode, but the episode after that. That's the new one from the guy Patrice Desilets, who was the lead designer on Assassin's Creed and Assassin's Creed 2, and then a lot of Brotherhood before he left, and then had like this huge falling out with Ubisoft, and then tried to make a game at THQ, and then THQ went under. And then Ubisoft bought the game and the studio he was working on, and then they shuttered the game immediately, and he left and sued Ubisoft and then started this other game. It's this whole thing. So he hasn't really made a game since, working on Brotherhood. So it's been a long time, and I'm excited to talk about this one because it is very much a game right up my alley in terms of, like, it. You're playing a series of like apes over time as they evolve, and I love that idea of like storytelling through evolution, and something you never really see in film, and I'm like, oh, that would work good in a game, and finally someone's making something about it. So yeah, I'm into it. Anything we could look forward to from you, Mike, or are you just kind of lazy?
Man, I'm playing things. I don't know if I'm allowed to talk to them though, but they're gonna be cool, maybe. I don't know. What am I, a prophet?
All right, let's go. Let's wrap this thing up then.
I'm also heading off to Gamescom next week. Cover Microsoft and some of the other stuff there.
That Microsoft thing is going to be coming up soon, right? Like, when do we?
Monday.
Next Monday. Okay, geez. All right. So yeah, we'll probably talk about that on the podcast next week. Mike won't be here. Maybe.
I'm trying to figure that out.
Yeah. So there's some stuff happening. Okay. Why don't we have everybody?
It'll be a simple week.
Yes, I'll just do it by myself. That'll be fine. All right, Mike, let's start with you. Tell everybody where they can find you on the internet.
Find me on Twitter at Tolkoto, TOLKOTO, at ebpodcast.com. That's where I do the Exploding Barrel podcast about video games and 90s Disney. That is my new Disney podcast, so check that out too.
Go ahead, Dean.
DTech on Twitter.
That's it? That's all you have to say? That's the only place you are on Twitter? All right, fine. I'm Jeff Grubb on Twitter and on Twitch. And on YouTube, I'm youtube.com/Jeffrey Grubb. Look out for us. We'll have a show next week. I might drag Dean back on if he's available at all. He's going to be in a different time zone.
I'm in Germany at a very odd time.
And I'm just going to call you, and you're just going to have to be on. We'll figure it out. All right, everybody. Thanks for listening. We'll catch up with you next week. Have a good one.